You're too damn white, guys.
Welcome back to another Two Damn White Guys. I'm Julian Smith.
I'm Andrew Rader.
And today we decided it would be fun to talk about the Federal Reserve. We're going to just dive into the most boring subject possible. What do you think, Andrew?
Do you think fun has ever been used in the same sentence with the Federal Reserve?
The Funderal Reserve. I mean, here's the thing. The Federal Reserve is it's shrouded in mystery, which is part of the reason I wanted to talk about this. It's like it's such a complicated... The economy's complicated. When we were talking about this, Andrew was like, yeah, it's just, I don't think anybody really understands how it works entirely. And further, we should note, we are two damn white guys talking about this, so we are not experts.
We may get it totally wrong, so please let us know, and you can correct us. And next time, if you're an expert on the subject, we can interview you about it.
I think what we can offer here is, Andrew, you're a big history buff. And and so you're very familiar with how things worked in different countries before there was a federal, because the Federal Reserve is pretty new. It's like it was invented in 1913, on the heels of several great recessions and depressions. And and I guess that's its core function, right? Is to kind of stabilize the economy so there isn't depressions and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, not exactly depressions necessarily, but runs on the bank. It's to regulate banks, stabilize inflation. Yeah, it's kind of stabilize the economy, definitely. So make decisions that aren't they're basically decisions that are in the public interest.
Yeah.
Economic decisions in the public interest. Yeah.
Now, the Federal Reserve is also, it's shrouded in mystery, but it's also, there's so much conspiracy theory around it. And so we're going to kind of ask some questions of some of the more popular conspiracy theories towards the end of the episode and just kind of try to answer them in terms of history and as sensibly as we can, because, you know, we don't love conspiracy theories on this show, but they are fun.
I guess so. I've never heard these conspiracy theories, so I'm going to do my best to debunk them given limited information.
I hear tons of conspiracy theories. That doesn't mean I buy any of them, but they are fun.
Yeah. We must run in different circles. I don't know that I've ever heard a conspiracy theory told to me as like a credible thing, actually.
Yeah, definitely not.
I've heard it like, have you heard that some people think Earth is flat? And I'm like, what? Seriously?
I can kind of see why people would buy into conspiracy theories, and we're not here to talk about conspiracy theories specifically, so we shouldn't spend too much time on it. But I can kind of, people love sensationalism and they love to be afraid, and that's what conspiracy
it's
theories are.
It's like watching a horror movie.
Yeah.
And also,
I think maybe some people get this like sense of excitement on it, like there's more going on than what meets the eye, and it like
And they figured out the secret to everything.
Yeah.
To life, the universe, and everything. The answer is 42.
But first, you should tell me what happened this week in the news. Will you do that?
Andrew tells Julian the news.
So alligators have learned to ring doorbells.
Oh my God, wait.
There was a woman in South Carolina who came to her door and there was a ring at the doorbell and there was an alligator ringing the doorbell. So
it was standing up?
Friendly alligator. Well, it was standing up. It was probably in a suit asking if you found God or Jesus. You know, what are those? The Mormons? Who are they?
That's the Jehovah's Witness.
Who comes to your door? Jehovah's Witnesses, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was probably a Jehovah's Witness alligator.
What news publication covered this?
I saw this on, PBS NewsHour, which is a pretty good
wow.
Or a pretty good source.
Must have been a slow week.
And teens who were stuck at sea off the coast of Florida were rescued by a boat. They were praying for rescue, and they were rescued by a boat called the Amen, or Amen, if you prefer.
The boat had no connection to them? It's just a random boat called Amen?
A random boat called the Amen. So maybe prayer does work.
Interesting. An interesting fun fact about Amen is that it means, so be it, which is why people say it at the end of the prayer.
Oh, really? Yeah, interesting. Did you know that hocus pocus comes from hoc e corpus, meaning this is the body? So like the body and the blood from Jesus, the Last Supper thing, communion.
Oh, really?
When they do this is the blood of Jesus and this is the body of Jesus. In Latin, hoc e corpus is this is the body, which is hocus pocus, because Christians used to think that literally the bread turned into the flesh of Jesus, transubstantiation. There was actually like a lot of people were killed over this idea.
Mm-hmm.
In 30 Years' War, people, different religious groups thought that, no, it's just symbolism. Or No, literally the bread turns into the flesh of Jesus.
Yeah.
And so this is a very big religious idea that caused a lot of friction back in the day.
Yeah, Catholicism still subscribes to that idea, although there are very...
Do they really actually still think that the blood and the wine and bread literally turn into the flesh?
That's what they say. That's what they say in the ceremony. Yeah. But I also kind of put Roman Catholicism in this box of like quasi-mysticism. Like, I don't really think they actually believe most of what they're saying to be literally true. I think it's just really symbolic and like... Yeah, you know.
Well, so that means that it doesn't literally happen if it's symbolic.
But when you go to mass, they're like, and they're doing communion, it's like this is literally happening. That's what they're saying. But I feel like it's kind of a performance or something. I don't know.
It's like when young people these days use literally to mean figuratively.
I think. Yes, exactly. I love that you said young
literally
people.
Just to give emphasis, but it actually doesn't mean literally. It just means figuratively.
The fact that you just said young people, you're such a grandpa now. These young kids today.
Oh, totally. You don't even want to know how old I am now.
Well, I know you were born in the late 70s, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're younger than you look. You look good.
Wait, I'm younger than I look? That's bad.
You're older than you look.
Yeah.
You're actually, you look like a 60-year-old man, Andrew. You're doing pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Shouting at the young kids. I got my rocking chair on the porch, drinking my lemonade.
Nice.
With my shotgun.
And now we've gone off on a tangent about Roman Catholicism and the blood of Jesus during an episode about the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, they're kind of similar.
All right, so let's talk about the Federal Reserve. I guess we should start. I think maybe it probably makes sense to kind of cover like the years leading up to its invention in 1913 and talk about the depressions and things like that and the volatility of the dollar.
Yeah. So what is money? Money is confidence. This kind of goes back to like the whole idea. We actually had an episode on what is money?
Right.
WTF is money. Because money is just like a promise. It's like an IOU that, you know, if I do something for you, if I give you my goods, like why would I trade a cow for some bits of paper, right?
Yeah.
If I was like a hunter-gatherer, if I was a farmer, why would I bring my cow to the market and trade it for bits of paper? Obviously, paper money didn't really used to exist because people thought that that's like a step too far. Like little bits of rocks, little bits of gold, maybe that's okay. But like, what's this paper that literally money, dollar notes are promises. They literally say this note is, they're called promissory notes. Like this is a promise to render some other goods and services. And
you don't mean literally like the New Kids mean literally.
No, I mean actually literally. a dollar bill is a promise, basically.
Right.
A promise to do
promissory
to do
note,
right? And, you know, historically, there was a lot of problems with governments just printing money whenever they needed them, which just increases the money supply. So then there's more money chasing the same amount of goods, and that creates massive hyperinflation, which destroys people's savings because then money isn't worth what it used to be worth. So there has to be these regulations and controls to ensure that the Wild West of finance and business doesn't just go off and do its own thing. And the late 1800s were a really rocky time in American finance, and it's the time of the robber barons. It's kind of like extreme capitalism in a sense. And there were all these runs on the banks and not adequate regulation of the financial industry, so lots of people lost lots of money and speculations. Even like securities and stocks and stuff weren't well regulated, so anyone could put out like stocks for anything, and they were just like promises. And how do you know you're actually getting your money back? And you have like the Ponzi schemes, which is like a pyramid scheme, which comes around today, which is like investors seek money for one thing, and then they just get more investments later on to pay back the original people. And there's really nothing that's happening except more people are coming on, so more money's available, and they pay back the other people with massive interest, and you just promised that there'll always be payoffs, and eventually it hits this wall and there's no money left.
Right.
It's like a run on the bank.
Right.
And so the Federal Reserve was basically set up as the lender of last option. So they bailed out AIG back in 2008 or 2007, I think it was actually, in the last financial crisis. So if a bank cannot find money to pay the people who want the money, then it can trigger a massive crisis. And that's a run on the bank. It was actually in that Christmas movie. What's that movie?
Oh, yeah. It's A Wonderful Life.
Wonderful Life. Yeah. There was like a famous run on the bank in that movie. But basically the way banks work is they take your money. they don't have your money. They lend right. it out. But the Federal Reserve regulates how much of that money they're allowed to lend. Mm-hmm. So typically banks lend about 95% of the money they have out, and they only have about 5% of the money at any time. It varies a little bit, and there's regulations around that. But they make money by lending money. So that's how they do it. And they often lend money to other banks who then lend out your money again. Right. So it's this massive, massive inflation of, and not inflation in the sense that like prices are increasing, but the money supply increases because one bank lends 95% of the money out to other banks, and then they lend 95% of that money out to other banks.
The resources are constantly at work.
Each other. Right? So, and no one really knows, well, people know individually, but there's all this money out there that's being lent around, and that's pretty much how the economy works. And the Federal Reserve is set up to both regulate that and also set rates that they will lend to other banks. So you can basically get lending from the Federal Reserve at a particular interest rate. So they set interest rates for the economy, which is like the bank-to-bank lending rate, mm-hmm. The rate of interest. And also this tends to affect a lot of lending that are also influenced by that. So mortgage rates tend to be set to like a standard bank-to-bank lending rate plus a certain amount. Car payments are based on that as well. So it's just kind of like the rate of interest of lending in the economy, which has tons of impacts down the road. So we've covered a lot. I don't know. Like,
I think that's the episode, guys.
That's the whole episode. Okay,
yeah, so, thanks for listening.
But that's kind of how it works. Basically, they set bank-to-bank lending rates. They're the lender of last resort. And it's basically to stabilize the economy so there's not like these runs on the bank. So banks can always afford to pay out if needed at a certain interest rate.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like it has done, the Federal Reserve, I mean, it has done its job since we invented it. The dollar has been much more, it's grown a lot more. Well, actually some people would say it's been devalued, but I don't think that that's directly related to the Federal Reserve, right? Some people say that the dollar is much weaker today than it used to be.
Yeah, so that's just the relative strength of one currency versus others in the world. And that's more based on trade, like the relative balance of trade, and countries can also intentionally devalue their currency to encourage exports, and which often helps the economy and things like that. So that's not really related to the Federal Reserve, I don't think. What is strongly related to the Federal Reserve is inflation. And because the Federal Reserve dictates how much money is put out there. So they don't actually print the money, that's the Treasury, but they kind of determine how much money is released into the economy. And basically, it's been determined by economists that a certain amount of inflation is healthy, and too much inflation is super bad.
Yeah.
So they kind of target a rate of around 2%. And if you look at interest rates inflation rates in the past couple of years, it's sort of between 1.5 and maybe like 2.5%. So they kind of increase interest rates to reduce inflation or decrease them to increase inflation. So they just kind of like try to target the a healthy rate of growth. And I kind of think that no one really understands how the entire economy works, but there's just these rules of thumb based on observations of economists over the years of like what works and what doesn't. So they have guidelines for that. And
they're trying to hit like a equilibrium with consumerism so that people are participating in the marketplace, buying mm-hmm. things, selling things. And you know, when you go through like a great recession like we just had in 2008, you can like go on the government's website and just see when the dollar just bottomed out and there was like no activity. And then you can see when they started initiating what they started calling quantitative easing, where they mm-hmm. started artificially, affecting interest rates to incentivize consumerism. And then the dollar started inching back up to normal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And in the last like 10 years, interest rates have been uncharacteristically like really low, basically, as all sort of as result of the Great Recession. So basically to try to stimulate the economy to encourage a lot of borrowing, because if you have low interest rates, then it's cheaper to borrow money. And then people feel confident to go out and buy houses because they can afford the mortgage payments, and buy cars because they can afford the car payments, and basically just borrow money in general for whatever projects. Businesses borrow money to expand their business, trying to make more money, and then they hire more people, which is better for the economy because then there's more jobs. So in general, it's better for the economy to have these lower interest rates, but then you could possibly run up against inflation, because if people are earning more money and there's basically low unemployment also has a negative impact, which is that it becomes really competitive to hire people, and it's hard for companies to find good talent to hire because there's no one kind of unemployed really. So there's competition for jobs, and then people get like massive increases in salaries, and then businesses lose employees and they have to chase after them. And just the fact that people earn more and more money means that there's more money in the system and people can afford to buy more, and it's more inflation basically. So,
right.
Yeah. It's kind of like overheating the economy basically.
So it's a good thing that we have a Federal Reserve, because, you know, in times before we had one, the economy would have just bottomed out. People wouldn't have had money to buy food or homes or anything like that, and they would have just been on their own. And the Federal Reserve allows us to keep the currency stable. We're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. I promise. I guess it must have to do with the size of the country or something, because currencies didn't always have federal reserves, central banks.
Some countries don't have that at all. And obviously, like Zimbabwe is a case of recent massive hyperinflation,
right,
where, you know, they had to print billions of dollars, and they still were actually trillions. I think I have a $100 trillion bill from Zimbabwe, and it's worth nothing because the currency isn't even functioning anymore. Mm-hmm. And they use South African dollars and American dollars. So basically, it used to be, and there was a lot of economic theories about printing money. And one of the early cases was in France. They were trying to encourage people to move to Louisiana, which everyone recognized in France to be a swamp that no one would ever want to live in. So, like, the French owned New Orleans, and they couldn't. They had a Louisiana company, and they issued shares, and they printed money for this. It was actually the Scottish economist that came to Paris and told the king that he knew how to run an economy and he'll take care of it. And he just printed lots of money and issued lots of shares in this Louisiana company.
Nice
but
trick.
Because everyone died because of the mosquitoes and the yellow fever, and no one wanted to move to swamp infested Louisiana.
Sorry, Louisiana.
They actually recruited prisoners from the Paris jails and prostitutes from the streets and sent them to the ships in chains together to move to Louisiana, because it couldn't get anyone to move there because it's such a crap hole.
God. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's how Mardi Gras started. It's like this like celebration of crazy people.
Well, it's I guess theoretically a religious holiday, but anyway.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday. I think it's based on Lent, right, or something.
Seems like the opposite of Lent to me.
This was like one of the first cases of massive hyperinflation where the French government just printed money. And then after this whole thing blew up and it turned out that there was no value in the Louisiana company, the whole thing collapsed, and they basically had a rule that you couldn't have printed money in France anymore.
Oh.
It wasn't the first printed money in the world. The Chinese actually invented printed money. Chinese invented pretty much everything.
Yeah, we've been over this before on the podcast.
Yeah.
The list is huge.
Dynasty or something like that. Yeah. There's a list of like 100 things that the Chinese invented, which is pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And then because you can't just like print as much money as you want, economies generally were tagged to the gold standard, which means that they had to maintain enough gold in their treasury. That's like the basis of Fort Knox to support all the money they printed, right? So. Mm-hmm. In order to like release money into the economy, we thought that it was necessary to have the actual money present in some kind of like treasury of the United States or whatever country it was, right? And that's like the gold reserves. And so you pegged your currency to the amount of gold you had, basically. This went away between World War One and Two because if you try to do this, it imposes a lot of restrictions on your economy, and it makes it really hard to print money, and it makes it hard for growth, and you actually get like negative growth rates and stuff like that. So it's kind of like a real breaks and puts like a lot of it holds back the economic growth, right?
Maybe it's because gold is too rare.
Well, it is rare. That's the whole point.
Right. But maybe it's too rare.
Yeah. It's also, it's not flexible enough to allow for interbank lending and like an expansion of the economy, basically.
It's kind of heavy, too.
Then they went to like the Bretton Woods economic system, which was, I think John Maynard Keynes was a big proponent of that. And then they basically, since World War II, they basically loosened up monetary policy. So as long as we kind of like have good regulations, it's okay to try to, you know, expand the economy as much as possible, basically, is the idea. And then you have the government and the Federal Reserve basically injecting money into the economy when you have like downturns and depressions and stuff. And it sort of helps stabilize and add liquidity and stimulate economic growth when you need that stimulation.
It's not there to like create more money, because that's the Treasury's job. It's there to kind of stabilize the value of the currency.
If you think about it, without any kind of regulation, economic cycles, there's always economic cycles. And it's just because, probably it's just because there's like lag in the system and consumer confidence is important. And there's just like little perturbations, almost like the butterfly effect. Mm-hmm. You get just random variations and then they're exacerbated because when the economy goes bad, then people don't have money, they don't buy things, which makes businesses not earn money, which means that they can't provide jobs, which means, you know, it's this kind of, there's massive amounts of positive feedback in the system. So when things are bad, they get worse, and when things are good, they get better. And so just because of this positive feedback in the system, you get these big swings up and down and up and down of like boom and bust. Mm-hmm. And this is how the economy really was until they created the Federal Reserve in 1913. I mean, it has been a little bit since then with the Great Depression and stuff too, but there's been more regulation after that. And that was mainly to do with stocks and stock regulation. But
and it was also only like 13 or 15 years after the Federal Reserve was invented. So I'm sure they were still figuring some stuff out.
Yeah, for sure. They were definitely figuring things out. And also, like, so banks are funny. We think of, like, five big banks today, basically, you know, like Bank of America and Chase and what's that Western one?
With Western Union?
No, not Western. Don't they send telegrams? No.
Washington Mutual?
Wells Fargo.
Anyway.
Yeah. So there's, like, we think of, like, just a few banks in the U.S., but it used to be that all the banks, like, in the 1800s, all the banks, there were thousands of banks. So they were mostly like single branches. Almost all the banks were single branches. So you would have like the Bank of Fifth Avenue in New York City, right?
Right.
I mean, or the local branch of like Southwestern Topeka, Kansas or something like.
Very specific.
And they were all just like, that's the whole bank. There are a few like that still, small banks, but not many. And it's almost all one big bank. And so it was kind of the Wild West of finance. And in a way, it was, I guess, good because there's more opportunities for creating new banks and things like that. Like now it's kind of monopolies. But, you know, banks used to issue their notes, right? This is how money, like in the United States, really came about. Banks would issue money. So in the Civil War, there was greenbacks, which were issued by the government. But there was also, like, you could get a dollar bill from a bank because banks would all print their own money, right? And so there were thousands of different types of dollar bills in circulation because there were thousands of banks.
And they all looked different.
And at the same time, there was all these robber barons and it was super extreme capitalism and kind of the economy would go through massive cycles of booms and busts. And then after a big economic depression in 1907, they decided to create the Federal Reserve to try to stabilize things a little better so it wouldn't go through these massive boom and bust cycles.
You said earlier that not every country has a central bank, and that is true, but it's only true for like five countries. Most every country in the world has a central bank. It's only, I might mess this up, it's North Korea, Libya, those two are definitely on the list. Iran. Those are three of them on there. And then there's only one or two more. There's like four or five countries. Most countries do have a central bank now.
Okay, that's probably true. But I guess the difference is that many countries have too much connection between their leadership and the central reserve. So basically, like, if the central reserve is just a lackey for the government and totally run by it, it doesn't really work well. And it's like an aspect of corruption. So basically, you have to have independence,
right?
Independence between the Federal Reserve and the government. And this is actually one of the things that's coming up right now, is always historically, the chairman of the Federal Reserve has kind of done what they thought made sense. And they have a lot of advisors, and there's like these committees, and they kind of set monetary policy independent of politics.
They don't have to listen to the president.
Don't have to listen to the president. They're independent. And one of the issues that's come up recently is Trump has been trying to—
I heard about this. Herman
Cain. Jerome Powell what to do. Oh, I guess he's wanted Herman Cain to be like the chair of the Federal Reserve or something like that.
But he stepped down. Herman Cain withdrew himself from that, which I thought was great. Yeah. I was like, wow, this is actually the first time in the history of Herman Cain that I've been a fan.
So this has been one of the things. I think in general, Jerome Powell's been doing a pretty good job. But I think he has been trying to maintain independence. But this is one of the criticisms that's come up recently. So it's just really important that the Federal Reserve maintain policies independent of politics.
I agree.
So I think this is one of the issues possibly with some countries' Federal Reserves. Maybe they're too tied into what the leader wants to do. And like, example in Zimbabwe. So obviously, Robert Mugabe, he was like the leader of Zimbabwe. He's gone now, but he basically was super rich and, you know, took like basically all the money in the country and stuff. And lo and behold, it turns out that there was this big lottery in Zimbabwe. And just by pure luck, the winner of the big lottery was Robert Mugabe.
Of course.
Yeah.
So the Federal Reserve is there to prevent corruption and to stabilize the currency, to prevent depressions and inflation and things like that. So it's a good thing that we have one. And we're going to get into some of the world's most favorite conspiracy theories surrounding the Federal Reserve. But first, we should probably take it to Earth to Damn White Guys. What do you say?
Yep, sounds good.
Earth to Damn White Guys. Earth to Damn White Guys.
So I asked, does anyone truly understand how the entire economy works? Because this is something that is kind of like a famous thing. And I think this is probably true. Economists know a lot. But, you know, economists differ and they have different opinions on what should be done, especially like we're seeing with the Trump tariffs. Most economists think that's a bad idea. But, you know, Trump has this economic advisor who I've listened to. He seems like relatively smart, who thinks these are a good thing. And he has some reasons, you know. But so basically, people have different opinions because it's super complicated. The economy is like the human brain. No one really understands how it all works. It's just like a lot of interconnections. There's billions of different interconnections. And it's all based on like consumer confidence and lending confidence and all this stuff. And there's these cycles that happen, but we don't really know why they happen. It's just kind of like we can point to individual explanations often, but in hindsight, like we can't predict very well. Like no one really knows how this stuff works.
So it's like the human brain in Vegas.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, and people understand elements of it, certainly, but I think no one really understands it. And I think that's actually sort of borne out by the survey, which is very scientific on Twitter. Basically, 11% of people said, yes, someone truly understands how the entire economy works, but about 90% agree that no one really understands how it totally works. And just a Scottish Yorkie says, I have a far greater understanding than most, but to understand the entire economy needs knowledge of all identifiable and measurable parts. So basically saying, yeah, it's pretty much impossible. One guy just had a picture of Bill Gates trying to like squeeze his hands together in a very confused way. So basically, I think that means no.
I think this is why we need a Federal Reserve, because it is so complicated. It's so and like you said, so much of it is based on confidence. So you need this like third party that's neutral to just kind of look at the data and be like, okay, we need this, we need that, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like the reason we have a Federal Reserve is because no one really does understand it. So it's kind of a correction mechanism. I mean, we understand it enough to know kind of what works and kind of what doesn't. Actually, this is an interesting one. So Paul Anthony Taylor says, despite the claims of some economists, economics isn't a science. And I think that's true to some certain extent.
He says it's not a science?
Right. this is the way that engineering works, is we don't often know why things work, but we know they do work, so we do them. Basically, if you're trying to figure out, like, when they're trying to figure out how airplane wings worked, they didn't really know, like, what shape would be best. And there's no, like, theory. Well, I mean, there's theories of how wings work in general, but there's no theory of, like, what particular shape is the best. Huh. So what they did is they just tested thousands of ones and see what they did. Right?
Wow.
And then they so you just, like, test different things, and this one works the best, so we're going to use it. That's basically how engineering works rather than science. It's like, science, you're trying to, like, find out the theories behind things. With engineering, you're just, I don't care, like, how it works. I just want to pick something that does work.
You right? engineers are a bunch of clowns in suits trying to act like you know what you're doing.
I think that's the smarter way to approach it. It's through test. If it works, then you use it, right?
No, I'm joking, of course.
And I think it's kind
of
like economics, maybe. We've learned by getting burned. So we've learned through history, like, what is a bad idea and what's not a bad idea. So I think that's kind of like almost engineering in a sense.
Yeah. I think the Federal Reserve is like acknowledged. It's America acknowledging that they know enough to know what they don't know.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, it's called, economics is called the dismal science. But my dad was an economist, by the way, so we used to get lots of speeches about economics in the car.
That must have been fun.
I hated them at the time. I knew that I hated economics growing up, but now it's actually kind of interesting. So,
all right, so let's cap the episode off with just, I guess, a brief discussion about. We'll just pick out a couple of popular conspiracy theories surrounding the Federal Reserve, because I guess people like to hate it. Conspiracy theorists, especially because of families like the Rothschilds and, you know, J.P. Morgan was really influential with the Federal Reserve when it came to be. And a lot of people say, there's a lot of people that say that the Rothschilds and, you know, that, like, all these banking families that have been famous throughout history are like this elite class out to control the world and manipulate everyone into submission. And they're doing it through banks, you know, central banks like the Federal Reserve. But you had a really good point when I was telling you about, cause you had never heard these theories. So I was enlightening you. you had a really good answer to that, about why the Rothschilds have been so influential. And I wanted you to share it here on the podcast. We were talking about, there's this theory that the Rothschilds funded both sides or all sides of every world war. Had you ever heard, you said you'd never heard that before I told you?
Yeah, I never heard this. So World War II, I think that's definitely not true. You know, basically the Nazis expelled a lot of the Jews from banking in Germany and things like that. So, but in the First War, I thought this could possibly be true. And I don't know. I haven't read about this. My guess is because they are originally from Germany and I think they owned a bunch of banks there.
Now, to be clear, you didn't know about this theory, but you know a lot about history and the Rothschilds and their history with banking and stuff like that.
Well, I don't know that much about them in particular, actually. But, I mean, I know that they're famous for reporting on Waterloo, and theoretically, they reached London to report before any of the official messengers, so they had basically a faster courier service.
Keep in mind that your quote, not knowing anything, is most people's, like, genius. So your standard for not knowing anything is totally off.
I know the British branch of the family made a ton of money during the Napoleonic Wars by supplying the troops and basically having an agreement with the British government to supply the troops. So my guess is that, I mean, there's branches of the family in many different countries, including Germany, including Britain, which were on opposite sides of the war. So if there's any validity to that at all, it may be true, but it's no different from, like, a family having soldiers on both sides of the American Civil War. There just happens to be a family kind of on both sides of the conflict, right?
Right.
So,
which is a great argument.
As far as just kind of controlling global finance, I think people think that, you know, it may be a small cadre of people, and that's not really true. Although, I mean, relatively speaking, there are a much smaller group of wealthy people than there are less wealthy people. So, I mean, there's some validity in that, but I don't think there's any kind of global conspiracy, nor would it be possible to implement one. So I think conspiracy theories are super strange because...
Yeah. Well, they're sensational.
Explanation, like, for it to be true is much less believable than the default explanation, which is there is no conspiracy, right? So it's just conspiracy theories are always weird because they're just less likely to be true, so they're probably not true.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a great explanation because, like you said, the Rothschilds are a prominent banking family throughout history, so it shouldn't surprise people that they had kids in banking in Germany and kids in banking in Japan and kids in banking, you know, everywhere pretty much. And there's
not in Japan.
I think they are. They definitely are now.
Have financial connection with Japan, but I don't think it was. They had probably family members living in Japan during World War II, if that's what you mean.
Oh, I don't know about that. I'm just saying, like in general, now there is a central bank in Japan run by the Rothschilds.
Oh, sure. Is there? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe
pretty much every country besides those five countries that I mentioned a minute ago.
So when you say run by, I think that's probably a conspiracy theory, because I mean the Federal Reserve is essentially a federal institution which is run by a board and a chair, which are nominated often and stuff like that. I mean, I don't think there's like
If there's a prominent banking
families that own banks, but
if your family's if your family is prominent in banking and you know your family's dispersed all over the world, it shouldn't really surprise people that those families are still in banking in those countries. It doesn't mean that there is a global conspiracy, sure. But
right, yeah, but it doesn't mean that they're influencing the Federal Reserve or anything like that. I think that's a little crazy.
Yeah, well, I think I like conspiracy theories for the opposite reason that most people like them, because I like figuring out what the actual answer surrounding the mystery is, and you can't always get to the bottom of it, especially in with the Federal Reserve, you can't get to the bottom of it because it's such a complex thing. Like you were saying, there's not, you know, it's very hard to figure out entirely how it operates, and also probably they have to stay in a little bit of mystery in order to run effectively, because they're supposed to be removed and autonomous and independent and have no outside influences. So, you know, maybe that's part of it.
Yeah. I mean, certainly the economy is very mysterious just because it's complicated. I don't think when we say mysterious, I don't think we mean like there's intent to deceive. It's more like it's kind of complicated, guys. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that our stance on this is clear. Andrew and I are not conspiracy theorists. We are fans of the Federal Reserve. We're happy it exists, and I plan to keep using the dollar. I'm not going back to the gold standard. This has been Two Damn White Guys on the Federal Reserve, and the most outrageous of conspiracy theories surrounding it. If you want to help us out, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Those are so helpful. You can follow us on Twitter if you want. I'm at Julian Was Here. Andrew is at Mars Raider. And we do these episodes every Monday. Hope to have you back next week.
Thanks for listening. This is the most fun I've ever had talking about the Federal Reserve. But I actually think this is the first time I ever have talked about the Federal Reserve, so that might not be saying much.
And now you're contradicting yourself because you asked at the beginning of the episode if anybody's ever used the word fun in relation to the Federal Reserve, and you just did it.
Well, that was in the past. Now it's definitely true.
This is a success. It was all worth it just for this.